Tonight our Dharma talk will be given by Bama Sui Zen Senior Dharma Teacher, Michael Filicki.
So first I just want to express how incredibly grateful I am that this Ongo practice is happening. How incredibly wonderful it is to be able to in the busyness of careers and life, for those of us who are, lay practitioners, to be able to dive into this monastic practice, which is held so beautifully and so strongly with such great compassion and heart by our teachers and by the steady hands of those here who are running it. I'm so deeply appreciative for all your efforts and time and commitment. And then for all of us for coming, for dipping in and out. We are all turning the wheel here together just by showing up. And in some strange way, I feel like I feel this practice happening even while I'm off at school yelling at a student for, throwing a pencil or something. I feel like there's this real depth of practice happening in the midst of my busy, ordinary, everyday life. And I'm so grateful to all of you for making that happen. Such a great thing to be among friends and to be held in such a loving container, and such heartful practice going on. So obvious to me. I enter into this temple and I feel like I'm entering into a vast ocean of practice and love and charity. Just hearing Diane sing the chants there, I was almost moved to tears. Such a beautiful, beautiful voice. I hadn't even quite known you had such a beautiful voice, Diane, but I'm sitting here listening and I'm like welling up. I'm very grateful. It's amazing to be sitting between Melissa and David as well. I'm very moved. So, why are we here? Why do we do this? Keep showing up, facing ourselves in some way. And I think that's at the heart of this practice, is this question of, what we are, who we are. One of my favorite koan characters is Zhao Zhao, who is asked repeatedly in different scenarios, "Who are you anyway?" And his answers are as wildly diverse and sometimes seemingly unfathomable as they are frequent. So he's offered in one case, and he says, "I don't know." But maybe in a deeper way than that, right? I don't know. He bemoans the fact that his pants have no hole at another point, and mentions that he is East Gate, West Gate, North Gate, South Gate. All these ox carts passing through the city of Zhao Zhao, the city of Worcester, the city of ourselves, and us passing through the city of Worcester here for a short time inside Zhao Zhao's heart. So one of my favorite cases, I'm going to get to it in a moment, I just want to preface it with a small introduction by reading a few other related passages, but it's about Zhao Zhao. It's a story of question, he offers a little sermon, and then is questioned on it further and offers a response that I think is profoundly important, at least to me in my practice, and I think that it's repeated enough by him and by other monks that it bears some attention. But to begin, I want to start with some encouragement. This is from Cultivating the Empty Field. And there's a sentence in here that, in way of introduction, to my next introduction, which says, do not fall for occupying honorable stations, but enter the current of the world and join with the delusion. So, I know that for me, I often think that I'm going to rise above the delusion of the world, and that's why I'm here. And so to get this encouragement is helpful for me, very helpful, because I either become quite grandiose in my ideas about myself, which is one profound delusion, or I really, really disappoint myself time and again. Because this current of delusions is ours, it's our world, it's the life that we live. It's going to school and saying, please stop throwing that pencil at Mark. It's our way of engaging. It's our mind's activity, and often quite useful. So to join in this current of delusion and, you know, hope to save all beings in some way, is our way of jumping onto the ship of compassion. And I love in the end of that chant, the ship of compassion, how we are also told that our Miyoshi says, I have yet to grasp the essence of Dharma. I have yet to grasp the essence of Dharma. So again, you know, yet I get a whiff of it. This idea of grasping, this idea of holding on to, this idea of I'm going to get away from delusion, I'm going to avoid this part of myself that arises for the sake of freedom and liberation. You know, it's sometimes nice to have this encouragement, I'll just go with it. just let it be, just see it. Just see it. And sort of paradoxical and seeming to fly in the face of so much of what our practice is, which is this idea of cutting through. So I want to offer more encouragement here. And this comes from a response to a case in the Transmitting the Light, where we read in Atesho, though you may speak of mind and the objective world, and though you may speak of defilement or awakening, these are all just names for one's true self. So here we move beyond this idea that we should actually embrace delusion even as delusion. How do we know that our delusion is delusion, and how do we know that what we think of as enlightenment is enlightenment? So maybe one day I have a day of sitting and I'm just feeling really fantastic all day long. And I say, you know, I must be like enlightened today because, you know, everything is so spacious and I hear birds chirping. You know, whenever I hear birds chirping, I know I'm enlightened. Or there's a train going by. Whoa, enlightenment guaranteed. I mean, how do I know that's enlightenment? And how about in those moments where I'm in the midst of some kind of darkness and my mind closes up and I feel confused? But I'm seeing that confusion very clearly. Is that delusion? And so we come to our case. So this is a case that happens in the beginning of the Blue Cliff Record. And in this case, Zhao Zhao offers a little sermon. He says, Zhao Zhao teaching the assembly said, the ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. As soon as these are words spoken, this is picking and choosing. This is clarity. this old monk does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not? At that time, a certain monk asked, "Since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve?" Jaja replied, "I don't know either." The monk said, "Since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide within clarity?" Jaja said, "It is enough to ask about the matter. Bow and withdraw." So this is such a good case, such a beautiful case. Jaja offers up this teaching, which moves beyond itself time and again, beginning with, the ultimate path is without difficulty, just avoid picking and choosing. He goes on to say, there's my enlightenment, right? Finally, free of picking and choosing. As soon as there are words spoken, this is picking and choosing, this is clarity. Oh, right, but then I do pick and choose, because life moves forward, and otherwise I would be eating dog shit, and I would be picking weeds from the garden and eating them. So there is some kind of picking and choosing that goes on, and it's the functioning of our lives. Please don't throw that pencil. But when we become aware that we are picking and choosing, we become aware of the functioning. This old monk, and that is clarity. But then Zhao Zhou goes on again. This old monk does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not? Can we always be aware when we're picking and choosing? So the honesty of this case, the humility of this case, striking. At that time, a certain monk asked, "Since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve? What is your enlightenment then? What do you hang on to? What is it that makes you so wise?" And Zhao Zhao replied, "I don't know either." So for me, that's the heart of this case. And so important to my practice again and again. So important to acknowledge honestly, I have looked and looked and looked and looked for the hard and fixed Dharma that I can hold on to, that will save me, that will save all beings from suffering. I have searched and searched. I have tried to penetrate my delusion. I have tried to hold on to my enlightenment. And every time, I don't seem to be able to do it. Everything keeps changing. New ox carts passing through the city. And so we sit here and observe this happening. Observe this movement and this desire to preserve something, at least for me, often grows so strong. To preserve peace, happiness, joy. And then along comes another ox cart. Oh my God, today I'm frantic. Oh, today I'm so sad, I'm so ashamed. Another ox cart passing through. I say, oh, that's delusion. Well, this is where that encouragement can actually be very helpful. I don't know if it's delusion. I don't know if it was enlightenment before. I don't actually know. All there is ox carts passing through. And when I let them pass through, worry a little bit less about knowing whether it's delusion or enlightenment. Worry a little bit less about knowing for sure just who I am. Just what I am exactly. Well, for me, there's a kind of freedom in that. Oh. You know, so I don't know, can be such a threatening experience. So scary. See, because it's vulnerable, in my experience at any rate. This not knowing is so, so vulnerable. Because I can't find that fixed point that I can call me and I can hold on to. And so, as life happens, and as I lose somebody I love, or am worried and concerned over somebody I love, I hurt. And on the flip side, as joy comes through, I receive it. I receive love. I receive Diane's voice and feel, wow, how beautiful. This is our life, this movement. Can't seem to pin it down as hard as I try. But maybe if I can just give up a little bit on trying to pin it down, there's a little bit of freedom there. Thank you.
So please make yourselves comfortable. We'll have our Dharma dialogue here if you'd like. And so this is a time, I think most of you know what happens now, but just in case, we have questions, observations about your own practice, about the talk, reflections, anything that's coming up for you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Diane.
So many levels. you know, your final words there about not pinning it down seem to be such good teaching. Seems especially so, like, at the end of the first week of an Anga, you know, because... that grasping goes on and the flow that you were talking about. You know, I like the image of the carts, you know, coming mm-hmm. through one after the other. Mm-hmm. And there's such a tendency to try to pin something down, you know. It just seems so human to want to do that, to find something to hold on to. You know, like you were saying about, you know, where am I? Who am I? You know, when all these things happen, where did I go? You know, and just that real strong urge to fix something, you know. And I also liked you in the beginning talked about the river of delusion and the ship of compassion, you know, so I had this image of the ship of compassion. So it feels like, you know. So we've had a few boat analogies we've been working on here. We've been dropping the buckets or whatever right here, you know.
Where we are.
Yeah, where we yeah. are. And Ed's got a ship where his crew isn't paying attention to. Thanks for continuing the metaphor. Yeah. So now we're on the river of delusion, but with compassion. Right? So thank you so much.
When you were talking about pinning it down, I had the image of pinning down a butterfly. That the moment, and it just felt all the beauties gone, the flight, all of that, and it was very helpful for me to listen to you just being with my life, because in the morning I woke up and I had this sense of wonderful well-being, knowing I cleared the day to come here for the morning and the evening, and then in the afternoon I was getting all my errands done, and I went to the pallet store. I have a pallet stove, and I was looking forward to getting the pallets all week because they rationed them. And when I got there, it said no pallets anymore. And it just unraveled me for hours. And the more I tried to fight with it and say, you know, this is like not a big deal, let go, the more irritable I got. And I was watching, and then I was watching my train, which was, but you were feeling such well-being. And there I go. You know, I was irritable for hours, and it was like, wow, okay. And then it was like, well, it's time to go for the evening sit. Irritable or not irritable or deluded or whatever, we're going. And so I found your talk just delightful.
Thank you for describing the fluidity of the universe so vividly. But I feel there's a conflict that I understand that you're describing this like the shape, it's the forever changing universe. That's the way flow through it, flow in it. And then how can you offer compassion when you offer it and you have to pin down something, right? Mm-hmm. And because, say, when you point someone, like if I call your name, if I call another person's name, mm-hmm. when I call, I point to it, then I pin down. Mm-hmm. But how can I offer in compassion at the same time in within this never-changing dynamic? Mm-hmm. I don't see how.
So a wonderful question. Mm-hmm. So, and I really want to stop with the question, because in Zen, we really value. So I get that something caught you. So if everything is changing, how can I be compassionate? How can I offer mm-hmm. compassion? The theme of this time is about koans. And koans are these questions that we investigate. So rather than answer that for you, I would encourage you as you sit with your breath just to wonder, how can I be compassionate as I sit here not moving? How, as I see things coming and going, can I be compassionate if there's no fixed point? But hold it as a question and wonder about it. Because we value that wondering, that curiosity. Okay? Thank you.
I really liked your image, Mike, of the carts coming and going through the city. Jojo, or through the city of wisdom. Mm.
The city of Steve.
The city of Steve, indeed. Sitting like this for me for a week, you really see the comings and goings of the various carts and how, some of them you really want to chase after. they seem to have some pretty good stuff on them, and maybe they pass by, fairly slowly enough so that you get a pretty good look and maybe a taste of the merchandise as it passes, and it's gone, and I think it's why do you tease me? meeting whichever card shows up. It's such a, it sounds like such a simple thing, and yet it's so. Easy, difficult. I guess. I find my whole emotional being going up and down along with it. And, wonderful and I don't know, I just nothing like it really, you know. I just normally I don't have this sense of, you know, like really meeting what's, you know, the cards as they arrive,
yeah.
You know, and really getting a sense of that's exactly it, you know, just meeting whichever one happens to be here. I mean, there's nothing you can do about the one that isn't here right now. Mm-hmm. It's only the one that's here right now. I love this case. That's one of my favorite stuff. It's a beautiful case. So many wonderful points in it.
At the risk of flogging the dead horse, the carts running through Worcester for me are the trash trucks. It's like every time I come to Ongo, somehow putting the trash out becomes this interesting dilemma. For me, it's like, have I put them out properly? will they be accepted? Will I have to go to the officers' meeting and confess and tell them for having placed them in the wrong spot? And it's you know, so much of life is kind of not knowing that, you know, not knowing. I mean, I get told, and it's like practice,
yeah.
Because each time it comes up and it gets done, it's new. It's wonderfully new, and I wish to God they had cart horses doing this, so I could stand out there and at least enjoy the horses that went by. But thank you.
Well, they used to.
Sure.
Pleasant Street was one of the streets. You know.
And then they had to have some sweeping.
Yeah, that's right. Collect it. That's right. You know, I'm with you on the trash, because it's just a miracle when I look out there and it's gone. Where did it go? I missed it. Every once in a while I see the truck and I see it picking it up, but mostly it's just I put it out. It's this big faith.
I don't believe that there actually is a
disappears. But you know the thank you so much for that analogy, because there is I'm feeling a link between some of the comments, between Christine's comment about your irritation around not getting the pallets and you know, how do I be compassionate in a world that's so fluid and changing, and the carts just keep going by, and then what you said about meeting whatever's here. You can't have a cart that is the cart you want. You only have the cart you get, the one that happens to be passing by. If it's going to pick up your trash, if it's not, if it contains wonderful food, or you know, the very thing, the wish fulfilling jewel going along on Pleasant Street. You know, if you've seen that, you should look out for it. But if it's the card of irritation, then you totally meet that, and you can't try to be irritated when you're not. And if it's the card of compassion, you totally meet that. But you can't be compassionate when you're not. That would be all mental faldy-roll, right? So instead, it's like what's trotting down the street now. And it reminds me, there's a koan, I wonder if you can remember it, Mike or David or Steve or Diana, actually anybody, where somebody comes to Jajo and says, you know, does the name Jajo mean a stone bridge, you know, the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And this guy comes and says, well, I thought I was going to come and see this great stone bridge, but I see as a log bridge, you know, real insult to great teachers. Sometimes teachers are disrespected, it happens. And then he says, donkey's cross, horse's cross. I love that. Yeah, sometimes compassion crosses, sometimes irritation crosses.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and it's. I don't think he's saying "you ass" to the guy, but he's just saying.
This, and he says you've seen the logs, but you haven't seen the bridge. I think in that context.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So here we are.
But yeah. And it reminds me, Garrison Keillor has one of his stories about a trash catapult that you could buy. So instead of waiting for the trash people to come, you just get your catapult and catapult it into the neighbor's yard or wherever, you know, as long as it gets out of there.
As long as it's not in your yard.
But thinking that, you know, we often have parts of ourselves we'd like to catapult out. Right? I'll get rid of this irritable self. Go, boom! Oh, yeah! So, as long as we're talking about trash pickup.
It's a metaphor that like,
keeps on giving.
Keep going with it.
Yeah.
Let's change the subject. I wonder if anybody else has. Yes, is this a trash related metaphor?
No.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
As a beginner to Ongo, I was wondering why we do the ceremony with the Hungry Ghost Bowl.
Oh. Yeah. You want me to answer? Who are the hungry ghosts? Yeah. Well, I think it's related to the catapult, so we're back in the same territory. You know, there's a way of understanding that all through the day, we go through different realms, and sometimes we're in the irritation realm. Sometimes in the realm of the gods. Sometimes we're just, you know, animals. Where's my food? And, there's traditionally six realms that we just circle through all the time. Three of them are hell realms, but actually there are thousands and thousands of realms. And when we're in one, we don't know that we're in it. And then once we get a glimmer that we're in a realm that is, everything's become very narrow and focused on something, that's the beginning of it leaving. And one of the realms is the realm of the hungry ghosts. And it's one of the hell realms. And the hungry ghosts represent a desire that can never be fulfilled because they have enormous bellies in the metaphor and tiny, tiny little throats. Mm-hmm. You know, and the instruction is you just pick up a tiny little piece of food because it can't get down. It just a little thing. And we feed them. We feed that part of ourselves that is lost in wanting and always hungry with that little bit of food, and maybe some gets to it. And I used to think that this was a metaphor, you know, that it was it's certainly descriptive. How many of you have ever been in the hungry ghost realm? You know, everybody raises their hand, right? and all the other hell realms. And the heavenly realms are problematic, too. Just any place you get caught and fixate. It's really what Mike was saying, the butterfly again, you know, you fixate. So so the motion, you know, to recognize that you're in it. But we had a visit once from a Chinese monk who had written a book, and he came to Worcester. And we went out to our local favorite Chinese restaurant, Nancy Chang, and he was thrilled to be with other Chinese people, and he was talking to them, and then I was sitting next to him, and he said, "Melissa," he said, do you see them, the hungry ghosts? And I said, "No," and I started to blab on, I always saw them as a metaphor for art. He said, no, just look, they're everywhere. And he was right. When I looked with those eyes, I saw suffering everywhere, greed everywhere, yearning everywhere. So that's what the ceremony is about. It's like an acknowledgement of that reality that priest pointed out to me and that we're sitting in the middle of.
So I'm actually stuck on your question, and I think something maybe William said last night about bringing up ethics, because I, you know, avoid picking and choosing and, you know, accepting every cart that rolls through and so forth, and that all sort of makes perfect sense to me within a practice realm, within the realm of sitting here where I'm not going to hurt anybody. And certainly from the realm of the ultimate, where right now, whether I like it or not, all kinds of good things and bad things are actually happening. So clearly the whole contains all of that, so it can be said to be beyond that. But, you know, those of us who are wearing these little bibs chose a certain set of guidelines, which I recognize are fluid koans, but, you know, do good, avoid evil, save all beings, like, don't kill, don't steal, etc. When in doubt, don't add to suffering, don't harm, be helpful. And it's just sort of interesting to me that, I don't know, maybe it's just because we're in this context of exploring the ultimate, but I don't know, like we never chant them, they don't come up very often, not in a daily basis, and maybe it's just saying something about me, but of course it's saying something about me. I don't know, I don't want to be around a person who was like chaotic in their behavior. I want to be and be around people who are consistently ennobling and gentle and kind. And isn't that a choosing? Something like that. I do just like, I don't know. I need more, personally need more of that ethical thing to sit all of this stuff on or something. Does that make sense? I don't know.
So what's your problem now?
Yeah.
I mean, in this moment, I get the theory of it and that, but in terms of actual experience, I'm not quite clear where you're coming from.
Your question is to the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate this desire, and I think there is a danger in some of how we're talking that it sounds like, well, everything is fine, it's all empty,
right, which I know isn't the case,
right? And even on the retreat, so we talk about this great freedom, and then we say, sit still and don't move. And when the bell rings, everyone, please stand up, turn to the left, turn to the right, and I think that in some ways we're honoring these forms that are not sacred, but incredibly valuable, and that our actions, you know, so if I'm sitting here and I start wiggling and scratching, that has an impact. And that part of our training together is acknowledging that we have an impact on each other. What we do with our mind, what we do with our body, what we do with our speech. And we are vowing here to practice together, following these frameworks, that there really are quite formal guidelines here that we are following. And the point of all this ultimately is not about dwelling in emptiness, mm-hmm. but the point of this is that we can meet our life as it arises, so when irritation arises, can we be with it so that we don't kick the dog again, you know, so that we have some choice. So I think, you know, well taken point, and just be careful of it getting up into, well, there's a problem here that I'm going to have, you know, but so how do I live ethically right here, breathing in, breathing out?
And if I may, you know, what you just said and David's answer are very much like the koan that Mike brought in. you know, I don't, and like the koan I talked about earlier today, I don't get it. Give me some direction here. You say you don't abide in clarity? That doesn't make any sense to me, because you're talking about emptiness, but you're saying you're not abiding in it? What? I feel like you got the same spirit going in there. You know, and that this is the spirit of, I need to figure this out so I can just live my life and have a peaceful life, and it's so painful, and I don't want to hurt people, and I don't want things to be all chaotic, and yet they are. You know, when you said, you know, here we can't harm anybody, I wanted to leap in and say, are you kidding? You know, so much harm can happen within a sangha, even just what David was saying, through sitting, and it's already happened. We've been here a week. You know, people have, their feelings have been hurt, and all kinds of mistakes get made, and, you know, people get the wrong food, and it's just like endless. And this is a tiny little microcosm of the big chaotic world out there. And I also hear your yearning, which I also identify with, for I just wish that it wouldn't be like this. I wish I could figure out how to live so that I could avoid chaos. I don't think that's possible. And yet, we have to keep trying. I was talking to somebody sometime in the last week. I don't know. People have been coming, donkeys and horses. It's amazing. I don't know how many people have been at this Ango so far, but it's just like tons and tons of people. You know, scads of people, right? Just common. But somebody I was talking to was asking me privately about this very thing. And, you know, how do I live? How do I do it? How do I know... You know, when I feel an impulse to do something, I hear the instruction, pause and don't follow it. And then I hear the instruction, no, just follow it. And you know, this person was going like, what do I do? And essentially, you know, it's hard to understand this, but sometimes we follow the impulses and it works out. And sometimes we hold back and it works out. And sometimes we follow the impulses and it's disastrous. And sometimes we hold back and it's disastrous.
Okay, I see the pattern.
No pattern. And this is the chaos, right? And so what do? We do what Mike was really bending us towards, in a way. And Steve, I think you brought it in as well. We turn towards the cart that happens to be going by, and this is all we know. Otherwise, it's what David was saying. It's just endless mental speculation. And we can live our whole life there while the carts and the horses and the donkeys are passing by. We don't want to miss it. And that's what this person ended up saying to me. I don't want to miss my life. It just still gets me. I don't want to miss my life.
So this comes up for me a lot, because I spend a lot of time working with the precepts. I've been, you know, co-leading a precepts thing with Josh for many years now. And I love David's answer, because it's really one of these things that is a problem in theory and not so much in practice. But the practice is very difficult, too, you know. And we want, as Mike was saying, we want this clarity, you know. And we want to know, you know, so what do I do here? You know, sometimes I'm drawn this way and I don't know whether to go with it or not go with it. You know, what do I do? And it's just not clear. But I think the real danger is in not looking. It's in, you know, not paying attention. And that when we actually, you know, make these vows and be with what's here, we're not saying just do, you know, whatever. We're saying, you know, please look at what's actually going on here and then use your best judgment. You know, we know that what we do is incredibly important. You know, the smallest thing we do affects the whole world, you know. And we know that, you know. There's no danger that we don't know that what we do is important, and that the vows that we make are the ultimate thing in some way. You know, we come here and we make these vows, and then the whole rest of it is about, well, how do we fulfill those vows? You know, we sit here and we ponder these things. And it's just hugely important. And we know, you know. And it's when we look, you know, that the compassion, you know, it comes up and we know what to do, you know, when we really look. Or well, that's not right either. Sometimes we just, you know, we have no clue what to do. But the best path is to really examine, not to ignore, you know.
I also like to say that, like in listening to the discussion, it's just like the koan. Like, is it this way or is it this way? Or is it this way or is it this way? Just what we do.
When not abiding in clarity, that's hard to understand. Because once we get clarity, that's it. I'm done. I really will live for... And if Jiaozhou says that he doesn't, it really upsets that monk. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And rightly. Right. You know, I thought this was about clearing my mind. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, and I think that the Buddhist teachings, Zen in particular, really adds to this fire of like the mind going this way and that. We got emptiness, we got form, you know? Right. We got, and the list goes on and on of these opposing sort of poles, right? This tension that's between them. You know, north and south, east and west, everything always moving and seemingly in directions. But I feel like all of these like tensions are just invitations. Right? Every one is an invitation to something that's very alive. It's not either pole. That's just how we think about it.
And I think it goes back to this question about compassion and if there's no fixed point. And if if there's no fixed point in the precepts, what's the deal here? Is it anything goes? Mm-hmm. I can feel it flashing in and out. And again, this perplexity to honor, as I said over here, to something important here. So not to demean where you're coming from, but something catches us. And to honor that being caught, not from the, okay, I'll figure out here, but to live with this, you know, the longing, the fear, the unclarity, and the clarity, all of that. That's our great vow, not to turn away.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking too that, I gave the talk about Jiaozhou as an 18-year-old this morning, or 20-year-old, whatever, and here he is in his great maturity. And so he played both sides. You know, he was the one who wanted to know, had the same energy in his question that some of you have had tonight. You know, what is the way? And if I don't try for it, then, you know, how do I do this? How do I do this? It doesn't make sense to me. And Nanchuan just keeps meeting him with the same kind of spirit that he later meets this monk. That's the transmission, in a way, you know, that he got from Nanchuan. It's not about... Just what you're saying, Mike, it's not about knowing or not knowing. It's not about black or white, good or bad. It's beyond all that. It's beyond all those dualities. Yeah.
Well, I think we've made it pretty clear.
High five!
And the test will be passed out later this evening. So we'll sit for another few moments and then go on with our evening.